Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Do Go On. My name is Dave Warnicky, and as always, I'm joined by Matt Stewart and Jess Perkins.
Or are we joined by you, David?
I know. As I said that, I felt like I was the host, like I'm joined tonight by...
Yeah.
Well, welcome to the Dave Warnicky Tonight Show, featuring Matt Stewart and Jess Perkins, special
guests. That's your dream. You're Rove and we're Peter Hellier and Corinne Grant.
Oh, that'd be great.
I'd be okay with
I'd
that.
I'd be fine with that.
Yes.
Okay, which one can am we I? Do that? You're Peter Hellier. Look at me. I'm Corinne Grant.
Okay. Look at me. I'm Peter Hellier.
Yeah.
These are, of course, famous.
The nicest man in showbiz. Oh. Is that true, Dave? It's Dave's boss as well.
I do work with Pete Hellier, and he is a fantastic guy, both on and off screen. Very funny.
I met him in Perth very briefly.
He's a great guy.
He just seems so, like a very nice man.
I did a gig with him. This is going back quite a while, so, and it was me and two others who were fairly new, but like, you know. Fine. We were good. We did a good job. And then he was a headliner. But, like, he could have just left after the show. It was just perfectly normal. But we were just sitting having a drink. And he sat down with us. And we just had, like, a really nice long chat. He's delightful. So lovely. All that comedy. Ah, great guy. Anyway, that's okay. Welcome to the Peter Hellier Appreciation Show.
Yeah, well, I've got a lot of nice things to say about him. So let's go.
Tell him at work that that we've done this. Tell him.
I'll tell him to listen.
Yes.
For the first 90 seconds, and then he obviously can turn off. But he won't, because he'll stick around and have a drink with this episode.
Because he's a good guy.
That is absolutely right. Now, here we are for another week. It's always good to be here in the studio.
So good to be here.
Weather report, heating up slightly today.
Yeah.
So we'll get delirious about the hour mark. That's what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
But we'll snap out of it. Jess, it is your turn to report on a topic that has been suggested by a listener. You've put it to the Patreon our supporters to vote on.
I have. And I would also like to point out that I, Jessica Ann Perkins, wrote a question.
Fuck yeah.
Not 10 minutes ago. I wrote this at the very beginning of my report. I wrote the question before I wrote the report.
That's good.
Does that mean you didn't bother writing a report?
What?
Because usually you write the report and not the question. This week you've written the question. I assume the report is empty.
Yeah, she blags the question. This week she's going to blag the report. Easy.
So what?
You're going to nail it with a great question, though.
It's going to be a good question, and then we're just going to have some fun. We're just going to catch up. We're going to connect. Yeah,
let's riff.
Let's
just do some more plugs.
Okay.
People love plugs.
They love them.
Sorry about all the plugs, everybody.
Okay, here's my question. Ready?
Everybody's got to make a living.
I should. Should I? I probably should say now, should I come clean, Jess?
Maybe.
I have to sit out from this question. Get this, Dave. We haven't told you this yet. You know how we're recording two episodes today? Oh, am I saying that much?
No, that's fine, yeah.
Because I'm going to Adelaide, obviously we had to record one of these episodes ahead of time, this very episode. So last night I messaged Jess and I said, and you were there because it was in the group chat, and I said, Jess, just to double check, that we're not doing the same report. Mine's about a dead guy. And Jess replied, mine's also about a dead guy. Let's take this to a private chat away from Dave.
Oh, my God, because it's our biggest fear that we'll both turn up and do it. And you've spent 8 hours researching and then the other person's already done it.
So I go into a private chat with Jess and I go, hey, Jess. Anyway, and then I go, my guy died in the last 50 years. And Jess goes, oh, phew. mine died 2 years ago. And I went, no, mine did too. I was trying to be broad to not give it away. Mine also died 2 years ago, but a lot of people died 2 years ago. Was he an entertainer? She said, yes. Oh, I said, a musician? She said, yes. She said, first name, and I said, fuck off. Anyway, so we'd both started a report on the same.
Are you kidding?
Topic.
No, we're not kidding.
So I had to change. So last week, my vote was actually for this person. I had to go to the second most popular voted.
Right, which was Johnny Cash.
Yes. Yeah.
Dave, this question is for you. Which English rocker shares his name with an Australian department store chain?
Oh, I see what you're doing. Harvey Norman.
Go one better. No, is that?
No.
Harvey World Travel.
That's Harvey World Travel.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry. Is it Harvey World?
Harvey World. I believe you are talking about the one and only David Jones, a.k.a. David Bowie.
Correct.
Yeah.
The topic that I, or the theme that I went for our listeners was which Dave do you want me to do a report on?
And Warnocky didn't win the
vote. Warnocky did not make it. I was not going to do a report about you, Dave.
I was going to say,
you've
did you put it in?
Nothing.
I know, compared to the great man, the boaster. Okay.
But Davis, the people voted, and it was a bit of a landslide to
Bowie.
Yeah.
Well, I'm also a big fan of the David Bowie.
So, and do you know what? David Bowie. Do you know what as well?
There's a great trick question. It was too bad that Dave had that.
I know, he had that locked and loaded.
Mm. Sorry that I knew that.
Also, the name of our friend Peter Jones' is dad. He's David Jones.
What are the odds?
I know.
This is becoming a real Freaky Friday.
It's wacky.
I mean, it's not Friday today, but still.
They don't
that's
know
even,
that.
That's the freakier thing
if you're
about
listening
it.
On a Friday, though. Fuck.
Buy a lottery ticket and burn it because it'll be evil.
It'll be freaky. There is so much about Bowie. Like, so much that you can't possibly cover it all. So basically, my report, I'm just warning you now. It's largely about his early years, and then because he's done so much,
he's had so many careers
over such a long period of time. It's impossible to fit it all into a timeline. I don't know how he's done it. I think he's a wizard. Anyway, that's another theory for another day.
Mole person.
But I'm just saying that now in case people are like, you forgot to mention this part. It's like, yeah, I know I did. I forgot to mention a lot of parts. Anyway, so David Robert Jones was born on the 8th of January in 1947 in Brixton in London. His mother, Margaret Mary Jones, or she went by Peggy, worked as a waitress at a cinema. It's pretty cool. And his father, Haywood Jones, worked as a promotions officer for the children's charity Barnardo's.
Haywood is a great first name.
Haywood's Haywood.
Haywood's great.
Haywood Stenton.
Oh, my goodness.
So good. In 1953, the Jones family moved to Bromley. And then a couple of years later, in 55, he started attending the Burnt Ash Junior School.
Oh, my God.
It's a bit dramatic, isn't it? His singing voice was considered adequate by the school choir.
Stop it.
Adequate.
Okay, well, I suppose you still got in, I imagine, to the choir.
Oh, yeah, like he was still singing. He was fine. He wasn't.
They always gush the English, don't they?
God, they're just full of compliments.
How was the concert? Adequate. Mm.
But he did demonstrate above average abilities in playing the recorder.
Above adequate.
Yeah. Do, do, do. Do, do, do.
No offense if you are a professional recorder player, but it is probably the worst instrument.
Do, do, do. That's my primary school experience.
It is not the worst instrument.
Okay. Worse? Name one worse.
Triangle.
How's that worse?
No.
Oh, I mean, what is it? What can you do with a triangle?
Ding.
Yeah, but I'd be more annoyed if my kid was a triangle player, less annoyed if they were playing triangle than recorder.
Yeah, because if they're practicing recorder,
if
they're
your
standing,
kid's
sorry.
Playing triangle. What have you done wrong, Warnocky?
Okay, Matt, but you're thinking about it in terms of like that child's success. We're thinking about it in terms of how annoying practicing is at home.
Sorry, I've just remembered that bagpipes exist, and if you're good at them, it's fantastic. But if my child was trying to be a bagpipe player, there'd be many years of sucking and blowing, by the way, and I could not handle that.
But even when it's good, it's a powerful thing in it.
Yeah,
in
you wouldn't want a child to play that.
But you do get the opportunity once in a while, because it's quite a niche instrument. If you're good at it, you get cool opportunities. Like, I told you that John Farnham played at my work Christmas party.
What?
I told you that.
No.
No.
Which, when?
What?
Like last Christmas.
Like 6 weeks ago.
Yes.
I do not.
I fucking told you. I also put it all over Instagram, you
John
jerks.
Farnham.
John
no.
fucking Farnham.
What is your company?
John Farnham played at the work Christmas party.
What?
And I lost my shit.
How much money are they paying John Farnham? By the way, if you're from overseas, John Farnham is a big nostalgic deal here.
He is huge.
He was, you know, he had the greatest selling Australian album for quite a long time.
He is an icon.
Whispering Jack.
He's an absolute icon.
He's an absolute asshole.
He's an icon. He came and played at our Christmas party. I lost my shit. It was amazing. And when he did the voice, a girl came out.
Included a bagpiper.
Including, so like we got a fucking full backing band, John Farnham, and then somebody came out with the bagpipes and she played a little bit. We all lost our fucking minds.
Was
and then
he wearing a driser bone?
Wait, then she saluted John Farnham and walked off the
stage.
Did
he salute back?
It was incredible.
Did he salute back?
I assume so.
It's Darren Hinch.
I touched his hand.
You know Darren Hinch was in the film clip?
No.
Playing an angry husband.
Typical.
I think he fisted the table.
Oh, right. Okay.
Slammed the table with his fist.
Okay. Okay.
So how many songs did John play?
Oh, quite a few.
I was at Paul McCartney, which I mentioned not too long ago, and he played Mull of Kintyre. Fuck. Had a stroke mid-word there. And he... He during that song, a whole school piping band came out.
See, that's cool.
Playing recorder?
Playing the recorder.
And everyone left.
So David Bowie played the recorder. And, I mean, he play that in one of his big... I'm sure I saw it. That's in one of his hits.
We've derailed very early just because mentioned the recorder, which we all played in primary school. Oh, we didn't get that complicated. We got Hot Cross Buns. Anyway, at the age of 9, his dancing during the music and movement class was strikingly imaginative. Teachers called his interpretations vividly artistic.
Vividly adequate.
And his poise astonishing for a child. Kid could move from an early age.
Yeah, wow. Just doing an impression, and I can only imagine that's what he was doing.
Yeah. Oh.
We were talking earlier because I saw Father John Misty last night, and Matt and I in particular are big fans of his six dance moves that he has.
Yes. I love it. And he rotates through the six.
Oh, and they're so good.
Across the 2 hour set.
Oh, worth it. His father brought home a collection of American records, including Elvis Presley and Little Richard. And when he listened to Little Richard's song Tutti Frutti for the first time, Bowie would later say that he had heard God.
What a at the time he was listening to that song.
Wow.
Coincidence.
And then he sort of associated somehow with Little Richard. I guess you would if you listen to a song and God talks to you.
Yeah, what would God say?
Say, turn that off.
I'm talking.
Trying to chat to you and you're listening to bloody Tutti Frutti Ola Rudy. And what is he even on about?
Turn that racket down. Elvis also had an effect on young Bowie. Who said watching his cousin dance to Hound Dog made him realise the power of music. He took up the ukulele.
Sorry, just to confirm, his cousin wasn't Elvis Presley.
No, danced to the song Hound Dog.
It was like he loved Elvis Presley. Watching his cousin dance to Hound Dog, I was like, whoa,
no,
should have mentioned that.
Not related.
Okay.
He takes up the ukulele, which is a noble instrument that only the finest and most talented people play.
Put it up there with the recorder.
It's the recorder of the guitar world.
Fuck. I'll take that. It's also, like, adorkable, so... and whimsical.
Oh, no doubt about that.
Tiptoe
through the tulips. That's one of the big hits on the ukulele, isn't it? Tiny Tim? Are those things I said real?
Matt's having a stroke again.
Yeah.
And he also took up the T-chest bass. which is a fun instrument. And he began to participate in skiffle sessions with his friends. So skiffle's like a jazz, blues, folk, American folk influence.
But an English, it's like an English thing in particular, right? Because that wasn't skiffle. The first Beatles band was a skiffle band?
Yeah.
Like the skiffle rock band.
It's influenced by American folk as well.
Right, but it's gone through a weird English. I want to say paradigm.
Okay.
No. I don't want to say that.
Usually a combination of like homemade or improvised instruments, which is basically what a tea chest bass is as well. It's the same as like Americans would do it with like a tub turned over.
Right.
Yeah, it's like that. He also started playing the piano and he left.
Finally a real instrument.
He left the junior school and he went on to Bromley Technical High School and he studied art, music and design. He became interested in modern jazz through his half-brother, Terry, and his mother gave him a saxophone in 1961. So just adding another instrument to his repertoire.
Mm.
Are you guys aware of Bowie's two different eyes?
Yeah.
It became sort of one of like his most notable features.
So long thought was he was born with, you know, because that is a thing people have. A condition where you can have two different coloured eyes, but I believe that's not quite right, is it?
Not right. So they're not two different colours. In 1962 at school, his friend George Underwood punched him in the left eye during a fight over a girl. They were 15, 16 at this time. He was apparently he was hospitalised for a number of months and he had several surgeries.
Whoa, months?
Months. But they couldn't fully repair the damage and he was left with faulty depth perception and a permanently dilated pupil in his left eye. So his right eye is like very blue. And obviously the pupil, like in light, will go quite small, but the other, his left eye will be permanently dilated, so it kind of looks almost black.
Right.
Oh. Hmm. The two boys actually remained really good friends, despite him, you know, causing all that damage. And Underwood became an artist and designed some of Bowie's future album covers.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah. And Bowie actually ended up thinking his eye kind of gave him an air of mystique. He kind of liked that part of his look.
Yep.
Which is kind of cool.
That's a good look.
It's a cool look.
Kids don't try it at home.
Also gives you an excuse to wear an eye patch, which he did.
Yeah.
And go to hospital for multiple months.
That's great.
Everyone's looking for an excuse, guys.
In 1962, he formed his first band at the age of 15. They were called the Conrads, and they played local gatherings and weddings. He left the technical school the following year at the age of 16, and he informed his parents of his intention to become a pop star, which his mum was not keen on.
Okay, David.
All right. And apparently she like arranged a job for him through a family friend kind of thing. She was like, oh, okay, you're going to be a pop star. And then like went and got him a job, a proper job.
That's interesting. The difference between Johnny Cash, we talked about last week, and his mum going, scraping together dollars to get him singing lessons.
Because she saw talent.
Mm.
Yeah, true. I don't know. I think there's probably something in every parent who just wants their kid to be okay.
Yeah, that's right. It's like, oh, please just earn enough money to be okay.
Just be okay. Yeah. But then after a couple of years, your parents get over that and learn to support your dream of the arts. And they say, okay, well, she's not going to do anything with that degree and that's fine. We're fine with it.
I mean, it's an art degree, so.
So technically, she's kind of doing it. Hey,
right?
She'll find her feet. Everyone's different. I mean, I guess that could happen.
when did they come around? Was it when you're on the radio?
It's probably when I had to move back home with them recently. That's probably when they've discovered that I'm really doing well.
Is that why they're happy with you?
Yeah.
Someone they discovered you were a runaway financial success.
Yeah, like, God, we're proud of this one. If only our eldest child with a stable career and a good skill set would follow from his little sister's.
The dreamer.
Footsteps. Yeah, she's our little dreamer. Oh, she's got a tattoo now. Fantastic.
Well, she's talking to the youth nationally.
Mm, mm.
When your brother came out and said, I'm going to be a builder, was your parents like,
they cried.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Over my dead body, said, you will be a singer.
I said, what do you mean you're going to work really hard at an apprenticeship for 4 years? What do you mean?
You're a disgrace to the name Perkins.
What do you mean you're going to just use your hands and very practical skills and your logical mind.
You're going to do the job that Jesus had.
What do you mean you're going to build people homes? Michael, not in this house, which you also built.
Wow.
Did he actually?
Yeah.
So every morning you wake up and you look around.
I literally, I now live again inside the house my brother built.
Wait, so it's not your childhood home?
Well,
when did he build it?
Well, as in we bought, oh God, this is derailing.
He was really gifted.
They bought the house, they've demolished the back of it, and he's rebuilt the back.
Wow. This sort of blows my mind that humans can build houses. It's like something
they
that gods
also
would do.
Do podcasts.
Well,
all magicians.
Jesus was a builder, as I said.
He was a god.
Okay, we've derailed. Let's get back on topic, if I may.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do go on.
So Bowie got frustrated with the other members of the Conrads because they weren't as ambitious as he was. They didn't have big dreams. So he left the band and joined a new one called the King Bees. Pretty good.
Could have been called The Dreamers or something, but all right.
His debut single was called Liza Jane. It was credited to Davy Jones and the King Bees. And it had no commercial success. And he quit the band less than a month later and joined another band, the Manish Boys.
Oh, these are shocking names,
David.
They're
not good names.
Davy Jones and the King Bees. I'm okay with that.
You like a da-da-da and the...
Yeah, that classic.
So the Manish Boys were another sort of blues group. They incorporated a bit of funk and a bit of soul.
Soul.
Bowie said, I used to dream of being their Mick Jagger, which is pretty cool. They did a cover of I Pity the Fool, which was originally by Bobby Bland.
Oh, not Mr. T?
And it wasn't very successful either, much like their first his first song, Liza Jane.
Unlike Mr. T.
And Bowie soon moved on again to join the Lower Third, which was a blues trio strongly influenced by The Who. And they released a song called You've Got a Habit of Leaving, and again, not hugely successful. He hated his stage name of Davy Jones, because in the mid-60s... It got confused with Davy Jones of the Monkees.
Hey, hey.
So he renamed himself David Bowie after the 19th century American pioneer James Bowie.
Such a great name.
It is cool. I like that.
So great.
His single, The Laughing Gnome, which came out in 1967, used sped up and sort of high-pitched vocals. And again, it also failed to chart.
I can't believe that that didn't chart, The Laughing Gnome. For someone who would go on to be one of the coolest people of all time, he had a pretty shitty start.
But don't
I'd love
they
to
all...
hear that. I don't know if I've heard any of these tracks.
No, these are all quite old.
And he's all he was very young still at this point, right? Still a teenager. Oh, he was at least early. This has been a couple of years through these ones.
Yeah, this is 67, so he's 20.
I love a guy. Like, That's drive. I think your career would just about be finished these days in music if you had that many failures.
Like five singles or something.
Because I think a lot of those, he signed a deal and they were released through a label or maybe a smallish label, but yeah.
So he's convincing people to back him time and time again.
Yeah.
So
a few weeks later after he released The Laughing Gnome, he released his debut album, self-titled David Bowie. And it was an amalgam of like pop, psychedelic, and it also didn't do very well. And it was his last release for 2 years. He sort of had a little hiatus.
It would have been pretty, like, imagine you make an album, you're pouring your soul into it, so it would be a bit...
So disheartening.
Mm.
Yeah.
But I guess it depends. I mean, we're talking about flops compared to where he ended up. I guess, you know, when you're starting out, selling any albums would be somewhat exciting, right?
For sure.
Which he didn't do. Absolutely zero sales.
Well, remember when we started the podcast and it got like any downloads and we were like, oh my God, people are listening.
Amazing.
Now we're like, more.
We are evil. We have become evil.
Yeah.
We've become what we hate.
It's changed us.
I missed that bit.
Did you miss that? I do that every week. I say, how many downloads have we got? More. I want more. Anyway, also in 1967, he began to study the dramatic arts under the tutelage of a gentleman called Lindsay Kemp, who was an English dancer, actor, teacher, mime artist, and choreographer. Bowie studied a range of things from avant-garde theatre and mime, And he continued to release music and perform with other groups, but he was kind of focused more on his other studies and doing these sorts of things as well. In 68, Kemp choreographed a dance scene for a BBC play called The Pistol Shot, and he used Bowie along with a dancer, Hermione Farthingale. And the pair began dating and moved into a London flat together. Hermione Farthingale.
That's amazing.
That's fantastic.
Farthingale.
Hermione is already good.
Yeah.
Farthingale.
Yeah.
She sounds like a mythical, she sounds like a character in something exciting.
And some sort of thing.
Oh, I couldn't quite put my finger on it, but yes, yes, that is it.
Basically, what I'm saying is that's a cool name.
Yes, I read. What do you read? I read things.
What's your favourite genre? Things. I say stupid things.
Farthingale is.
Farthingale. Wow. So they also, Farthingale and Bowie formed a little group as well with guitarist John Hutchinson. And for a few months, the trio gave a small number of concertos, not really, concerts, combining folk.
They didn't give a concerto. No, I never, concertos.
I never connected the word concert and concerto together. Is that, what does concerto mean?
Concert.
Does it really? I always, yeah, because I always associate that with classical music, right?
Mm.
And it's sometimes that's a piece of music that's called a concerto, right? But that's what it's saying. It was just made for the...
For a performance.
For a performance. Fascinating.
Let's have a look.
It's the first thing I've learnt in this episode.
It's a musical composition usually composed in three movements in which usually one solo instrument, for instance, a piano, violin, cello or flute, is accompanied by an orchestra or a concert band.
Right.
That's a concerto.
Okay, so I didn't learn anything then.
I take that back.
So yeah, they were sort of performing as a group. And they broke up in 1969 when she went to Norway to take part in a film called Song of Norway.
Johnny Cash, biggest artist in the world at that time.
Mm. And this affected him, and several of his songs, such as Letter to Hermione and Life on Mars, reference her. Letter to Hermione is a little more specific, less... It's a bit more obvious that he's referring to her.
Than Life on Mars.
Yeah, Life on Mars could be a bit more vague. Finally, in 1969, he found success with the release of a song. Can you guess what song?
Changes.
Well, think about it. So this is 1969. What else happened that year?
Around, Man on the Moon.
Around July, perhaps.
Space Oddity.
Yeah. There we go. I mean, Matt, you didn't give Dave a chance. His eyes were lighting up like he kind of knew.
Sorry, Dave.
I also thought of the moon thing, but that's fine.
Yep.
I'm not annoyed, just disappointed.
So on the 11th of July 1969, Space Oddity was released 5 days ahead of the Apollo 11 launch, and it reached the top five in the UK, which was huge. Well, like, it's the biggest he'd certainly gotten by that stage. Earlier that year, Bowie had met Angela Barnett in the April, and she was an American model, actress and journalist, and they married within a year.
It's interesting that Space Oddity was the first song a lot of people heard, because I reckon some people must have thought it was almost like a novelty song, right, if that's the only song of his you knew.
Right,
and it was
yeah.
being released at the time of the the launch and everything. So, yeah, so that's interesting. I bet you some people would have written him off early.
Yeah, one-hit wonder kind of thing?
Yeah.
Mm.
Similar to Joe Dolce's Shut Up Are Your Face. What's the matter, you? Oh, why do you look at so sad? That's no good, is it?
Is that released?
It's a nicer place.
Released around the time the first Italian man walked on the moon.
Yeah. Yes.
Shut up, your face.
Hey. Yeah, like weird Australian, Italian, broken English.
Mm. So he's married now to Angie, and she had an immediate and a very strong influence on Bowie and his career. He'd been frustrated by his manager, Ken Pitt, so he fired Ken. Space Oddity had really established Bowie as a solo artist, but he wanted a band. He wanted to have people playing with him that he could relate to and he could perform with. So he and his session guitarist, Mark Bolan, discussed it and they put together a band. They originally called themselves The Hype, which is a very cool band name.
That is cool. Much cooler than Lower Third.
Lower Third. All the Conrads with the K. The Hype. And they all created characters and wore elaborate costumes.
The Hype. I've never heard of The Hype.
Yeah. I've heard of Mark Bolan.
Yeah, but he's the front man from...
It's like Depeche Mode or something?
No, from... It's something like... what are they called? The like T-Rex or something like that. Mark Bolan.
Yeah, it's T-Rex. You're right. You are right, sir.
Big, like a glam yeah. band.
And so their costumes and stuff were really elaborate, and I reckon it was probably like a glam rock kind of thing.
Yeah.
And their first performance as a band was a disaster, so they went back to presenting Bowie as a solo artist, and they were his backup band.
Right.
Oh wow, they got one gig.
One gig.
They
was
just did
terrible.
That slow walk from the front of the stage back to their position.
And then the crowd started to come around. Like, okay, now
yeah, yeah.
something's changed here. I can't tell what, but I like it.
Bowie was like, just get behind the curtain, guys. Back behind the curtain,
guys. Fuck off. Get the fuck off the stage, guys. Guys, please.
The hype is real. The hype is not real.
There was quite a fiery relationship in the band, and there was tension and fighting between Bowie and the drummer John Cambridge. Eventually Cambridge quit and was replaced by another drummer called Mick Woodsmaney.
Much better name.
Woodmainsy. Fuck.
I'd have preferred Spainsy.
That sounds like someone making up a name on the spot.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Mick Woodmainsy.
Welcome, Mick.
Lovely to meet you, Mick. Bowie's third album, The Man Who Sold the World, was released in 1970, and this album was heavier and more rock-influenced than the acoustic and folk sound of Space Oddity, and Mercury Record financed a coast-to-coast publicity tour across America. He took full advantage of his androgynous appearance, and the original cover for his album showed Bowie posing in a dress. He's kind of like lying across a lounge in this really elaborate dress, and he took the dress with him on tour and wore it to press interviews. The press loved it. The public were very mixed. Because keep in mind, this is like 1970.
America, conservative in parts.
Yeah.
If it's coast to coast, imagine going through some pretty conservative areas.
And apparently one guy on the street one day pulled a gun on Bowie and said, "Kiss my ass."
Oh.
Seems like a weird thing to say.
And Bowie's response?
I'm not sure.
Well, you know. Pulled out a bigger gun and said, "No, you kiss my ass."
Yeah, that's how you get him.
You call that a threat to kiss my ass?
This is a threat to kiss my ass. So his music started doing well and his family's growing too. In May of 1971, David and Angie welcomed their first child, Duncan. I assume it's Zoe. Duncan Zoe Hayward Jones.
Zoe Bowie.
Zoe Bowie's the...
Yeah. But it kind of looks like it could be Zowie.
Zowie
Duncan,
Bowie.
Zoe Hayward Jones. This tour also led Bowie to the inspiration for his character of Ziggy Stardust. Dressed in a striking costume, his hair dyed reddish brown, Bowie launched his Ziggy Stardust stage show with the Spiders from Mars, which was the backup band, at the Toby Jug Pub on the 10th of Feb in 1972. Ziggy was a huge success. Bowie spent the next 6 months touring the UK and the show launched him to stardom. The Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars, it's a lengthy title, but it's good, was released in 1972 and it was Bowie's fifth studio album. Starman was released a couple of months ahead of the rest of the album and both the single and the album charted rapidly following his July Top of the Pops performance.
It's a good tune.
It's great. So good. And the album actually remained in the charts for 2 years, which is crazy.
Mm.
That's such a long time.
Got a bloody, it's sort of like that Shania Twain album all over again.
They say lightning doesn't strike twice, but it does. Once for Shania and then David Bowie.
Yeah. And when I think David Bowie, I think Shania Twain.
Shania, yeah.
You know, just equal playing fields. Mm-hmm. Now, the Ziggy Stardust character was a melding of the personality of Iggy Pop and the music of Lou Reed. They were kind of the two main inspirations for Ziggy Stardust. And after the success of his album, Bowie got to work with both of these artists who inspired this persona, which is kind of cool. He sang backing vocals on Lou Reed's 1972 Transformer.
And I'm pretty sure I've heard Iggy say that seeing Lou Reed and made him realize that he could be a musician.
Yeah, wow.
Like he goes, "Wow, you don't have to be a great singer to be a singer. I'm sure I've heard him say that in an interview.
It's amazing. I always really like hearing about all these incredibly famous people knowing each other from starting together, obviously, like Johnny Cash and Elvis gigged together.
Wild. Yeah.
When that's insane. Yeah, but then you're like, I know both of those names, but there was probably 20 other acts who performed with them at the same time as well, but obviously didn't get reach the level of fame that we now still remember them.
Yep.
But it's just so cool.
Very cool. Love a scene.
Do you think that with comedy, do you ever think which one of us is going to make it? I mean, I'm going to. Which one of you guys is also going to make it?
Ooh. I mean, is neither an option?
Yeah, I'd say neither.
Wait. Oh, as in you two?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. We've already established
that I'm the star.
Yeah.
I'm the star. Yeah, of course. I'm the Ziggy.
Yeah. Where does the hype in your shadow?
Yeah, we tried to come out and then you said, get the fuck back. And we said, all right.
It was for your own good.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So he did backing vocals for Lou Reed, and then he co-produced and mixed an album for The Stooges alongside Iggy Pop. So he's working with both of these people that inspired his sort of persona, which is really cool. His own album, Aladdin Sane, topped the UK chart, his first number one album. And his love of acting led his total immersion in the characters he created for his music. This is a quote from him. He says, "Off stage, I'm a robot. On stage, I achieve emotion. It's probably why I prefer dressing up as Ziggy to being David."
Wow. Mm. It's a man to feel about that.
He kind of struggled to separate himself from Ziggy. He said that he felt like Ziggy wouldn't leave him alone for many years. He said, "My whole personality was affected. It became very dangerous. I really did have doubts about my sanity." Right. Which is kind of crazy. After breaking up the Spiders from Mars, Bowie attempted to move on from his Ziggy persona. And he moved to the US in 1974 and he settled down in LA. The same year he released his album Diamond Dogs. It went to number one in the UK and he set out on his Diamond Dogs tour of the US. It was quite a show. It had a high budget stage production and special effects. And a guy called Alan Yentob filmed the tour and produced a documentary called Cracked Actor, which is fun to say.
I mean, you could have called it Diamond Dog.
Or Cracked-a.
Oh, that's better. That's why you're going to make it.
Yep. Just moved back in with my parents. The doco shows a sickly and pale Bowie. The tour actually coincided with his heavy cocaine use, which later led to his addiction. And he had severe physical issues, paranoia, emotional problems. He took a little break in Philadelphia. And in 1975, he released Young Americans. It's a very different sound to his previous work, and initially it kind of divided his UK fans. Bowie himself referred to it as plastic soul. Have you heard that term?
Yeah. Yes,
plastic soul.
It's like the Beatles album Rubber Soul is sort of a similar idea.
Yeah.
Sort of like white soul, basically.
Yeah.
Bit fake.
White people trying to do soul music.
Inauthentic or like, soul.
Inauthentic is the perfect word, yeah. So it's not real. It's not seen by soul fans as real soul music.
But he didn't describe it that way until later, did he? Or was it?
Yeah, I think it was later. Yeah,
looking at the time, he
it wasn't his intention.
It, yeah.
Yeah. That he was just sort of, you know, trying to create that type of music.
Hmm.
But it was.
I really like some of the
songs
on that album.
Yeah, Young Americans are great track. Yeah.
And other people did too. Like, it just initially people were just like, nah, different. Young Americans gave Bowie his first US number one.
Right.
And Fame, which was co-written with John Lennon, who also did some backing vocals. And Lennon called Bowie's work great, but it's just rock and roll with lipstick on. Which is, I'm not sure how to feel about that. Is that a compliment?
I think he's saying don't get too excited by it. But it's like, yeah, I mean, it is like he's talking it down to just lipstick, but it was a whole lot of, it was like he created whole worlds of fashion and stuff.
Totally. Oh, yeah, he was a huge influence, for sure.
Did you get to the, I forget, what was it at, it's one of the museums in Melbourne. They showed all his fashion and shit. I'm not talking too good.
They
right
did.
Now.
That was, that was a while ago, wasn't
maybe
it?
A couple
it
was
of
years at Acme,
ago.
Yeah.
Was it at Acme?
Yeah, no, right? I didn't get to it.
It was really good.
Yeah, it would have been.
I was picturing it at somewhere else. Anyway.
Cool.
It's a good story, but yeah, it was great. It was a cool expedition.
Pretty amazing.
Expedition?
Oh, an expedition to see the exhibition.
Exhibition. Yeah. I caught a train there.
Oh.
Yeah. Lost a few good men that day.
Just a few.
Yeah. I went over the top.
Mm-hmm.
Bowie was one of the first white artists to appear on the US variety show Soul Train, and he performed two songs, Fame as well as Golden Years, and both were mimed. Fun little fact for you.
Golden Years, famously covered by Marilyn Manson.
Mm.
That's the first version of it I heard. Golden Years. Golden wah, wah, wah. It's like just...
That's
the Bowie version. All right.
That's the thing. I know the song.
That didn't sound like either, really.
Yeah.
But hey, that's okay.
Oh, that was what you were saying.
Yeah. He's having a little stab at you.
So... Just a little quip.
Little
quip.
Quip.
Quippy.
Just a little quip.
Oh, ow. You just whipped me.
It hurts. Ow.
Whip.
Whip it good.
Station to Station was released in 1976. It was produced by Bowie with Harry Maslin, and it introduced a new Bowie persona, the Thin White Duke.
Uh-huh.
You know the Thin White
Duke?
Oh,
yeah.
This is the description of the Thin White Duke. It says, sporting well-groomed blonde hair and wearing a simple and impeccably stylish cabaret-style wardrobe consisting of a white shirt, black trousers, and a waistcoat, the Duke was a hollow man who sang songs of romance with an agonized intensity while feeling nothing. Ice masquerading as fire. That's good. The persona had been described as a mad aristocrat, an amoral zombie, and an emotionless Aryan Superman.
Oh, my God.
I mean, they're all good descriptions.
Yeah, wow. Put them all together and what have you got?
I mean, I'd put that on my posters for a comedy festival show. Faux show.
Thin White Duke.
Thin White Duke's good, isn't it?
That's good.
It was also kind of a particularly rough time for him personally. He had overdosed on cocaine several times. He was very unwell. He'd made positive comments about Hitler and fascism and later blamed a lot of it on the Thin White Duke character and also the drugs. It's kind of like it was all taken out of context. And yeah.
I've never heard that.
I know.
Dave, can you relate to that at all? Just out of context?
Being taken out of context, yes. And also several cocaine overdoses.
Dave. We said we wouldn't talk about that on the pod.
Well, it's my overdose, and I'll talk about it if I want.
You're right. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Sorry to shame you. He moved to Switzerland in 1976, purchasing a chalet in the hills to the north of Lake Geneva. Just a chalet.
Sounds lovely.
Man. Yeah. Because, you know, they talk about now there's no money in music, and still there's multimillionaires from music. But back then... The people at the top of music would have been fucking loaded, I guess.
Incredible. Well, he purchased a fucking chalet in Switzerland.
It did depend because there were times in England where they just got taxed hard, right? Mm. Like in the Beatles, didn't they get taxed like 90% or something at one point?
Gosh, that seems pretty high.
That seems high.
Yeah.
But it was a lot. But anyway, in this new environment, in his chalet, his cocaine use decreased and he found time for other pursuits outside his musical career. He devoted more time to his painting and produced a number of postmodernist pieces. He was quite a talented painter too.
God damn it.
He can do everything. He can literally do fucking everything. It's so annoying. When I can't do one thing. Give me one. One thing.
Do you want to paint? We'll give you that.
No.
We'll give that to you.
Yeah, you want painting or?
No, I can't paint. Just
totally,
stick
you can talk
figures.
Into a microphone.
Okay, can I do that?
Yeah, I mean, you're doing it right now.
That's how easy
it's
it is.
It's happening.
So
Have you guys, I'm doing it. Look at me.
No hands.
I'm literally holding the microphone. Normally it's no hands. Anyway, the album Low in 1977 moved away from narration in Bowie's songwriting to a more abstract musical form. I like this part, in which lyrics were sporadic and optional. I love that for some reason. Put some in if you want.
Yeah.
And I like that. It received considerable negative criticism upon its release, but it's later been heralded as genius.
Wow, because that's his first one with Brian Eno, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, that's right. And this is what he sort of calls the there's a trilogy here,
or the Berlin trilogy.
And there's another word used later. Don't spoil it. That I think you might enjoy. Don't spoil it. Composer Philip Glass praised Bowie's gift for creating fairly complex pieces of music masquerading as simple pieces.
Again, great compliment. Fairly complex, adequate to the years.
Yep. Heroes was released in 1977 and incorporated pop and rock to a greater extent. And Bowie was joined by guitarist Robert Fripp, another good name. After completing Low and Heroes, he spent much of 1978 on a world tour, bringing the music of the first two albums in the Berlin trilogy,
King Crimson. Sorry, that's Robert Fripp's band.
You went blank for a second. That's what you're thinking of. This tour sort of brought the music of the first two albums to almost a million people during 70 concerts in 12 countries.
Wow,
isn't that crazy?
Good average crowd size.
Hmm. And he'd kind of broken his drug addiction here as well, and he was feeling better. He's performing a lot better. The final album in what Bowie called his triptych.
Yes. Harking back to that first ever episode.
So good.
Bloody love a triptych.
All those years ago. And the third album was Lodger, and it was released in 1979. Lodger that. it was a mixture of new wave and world music. And there was quite experimental. So, for example, Boys Keep Swimming entailed band members swapping instruments. Move On used the chords from Bowie's early composition All the Young Dudes, played backwards. And Red Money took the backing tracks from Sister Midnight, a piece previously composed with Iggy Pop. So they were kind of like really playing with music and mixing it around a bit. I like them swapping instruments. That seems fun. Yeah. To me, they get like, they sing a chorus and then they throw their instrument to the next person.
Yeah, just imagining that it's like a little like musical chairs station.
I don't see anything wrong with that.
Yeah, it's almost like they just stopped respecting their listeners and just like, fuck it, who cares? We'll just release any old crap.
People are buying it. People are buying it. I'm David Bowie, motherfucker.
I don't know. I don't play this instrument. Let me have a crack at it.
Can we start a band? Dave, you can play bass.
I can.
I can kind of play the keys and a ukulele.
Get a recorder. I mean,
yes, the world.
It's a bit unfortunate that Dave took the bass, the one thing that I'm adequate at. But
can you do anything else, Dave?
I can also play guitar.
Yeah. Damn, what about drums? We need a drummer. Play drums. You can play guitar?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah, he can play it all.
Except drums.
You're suddenly so much more attractive to me.
Thank you. I'm a bad boy.
But I'm a real sucker for the drums.
Oh, well, I'll have a go.
Thank you.
Just like this band is clearly having a go.
Yeah, we're just going to have a go.
Have a crack.
That's what we could
do. I can do the drums. Lady drummers are fun. Hey? Lady like Spider Bake?
White Stripes?
No, they don't have a lady drummer. Damn it.
No, they had a lady bass player.
Yeah, damn. Anyway. Lodger reached number 4 in the UK and number 20 in the US, so it's still doing pretty well. Jumping ahead a little bit to the next year.
Slow down, Jess. I can't keep up with these crazy time shifts.
I am going to be jumping ahead soon, but I just also wanted to talk about Scary Monsters and Super Creeps, which was in 1980. It was produced the number 1 hit, Ashes to Ashes.
That's a great song.
Yeah. And it revisited the character of Major Tom from Space Oddity as well. He paired with Queen in 1981 for a one-off single release, Under Pressure.
Boom, 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 boom. Oh, so good.
So good.
I don't like it.
Don't you?
Really?
Yeah.
What do you not like about it? Their voices are both soaring. It's amazing.
I've come around to it later, though.
Right,
re-listening to it now, I like it.
What do you dislike?
It's funny. Yeah, I don't know. I've just never been able to get into it. I don't know anyone else. I know I'm a weirdo on this one.
Fair
but...
enough.
No, it's okay. This is a safe place. I remember after Bowie died, though, spoilers, they released, like, the raw recording of just their vocals, and it's really cool.
Yeah, right.
Really cool to listen to that because you're like, holy shit, those are two very powerful voices. So, yeah, that was kind of cool, and it became Bowie's third UK number one single, so it, like, it did really well. He reached his peak of popularity and commercial success in 1983 with Let's Dance.
It's wild how long he was at the top four.
Yeah, crazy, isn't it? And the album went platinum in both the UK and the US. Its three singles became top 20 hits in both countries. And, yeah, the album was number one. Tonight, which was in 1984, another dance-orientated album, found Bowie collaborating with Tina Turner and, once again, Iggy Pop as well. It included a number of cover songs, among them the 1966 Beach Boys hit God Only Knows.
It's one of my favourite tunes.
Mm,
it's one of my all-time favourites. The original, though.
Yeah.
Not Fitz David.
I love that song too.
Really?
Guys. That can be the first song we cover.
It's our song.
Yeah, I think the Beach Boys already nailed it.
Yeah, no, let's cover the song that we all think is one of the best ever and make it a lot worse.
Yeah, exactly. So glad you guys get it. Bowie shelved his solo career in 1989 and he retreated to the relative anonymity of band membership for the first time since the 70s. So he's like, no, I'm going to be part of a big group now. And the band that he was put together was Tin Machine. And although he intended Tin Machine to operate as a democracy, he kind of dominated both in songwriting and in decision-making. And they had some commercial success with their debut self-titled album, but Bowie put the second album on hold and sort of did some more touring as a solo artist again. In October of 1990, a decade after his divorce from Angie, he and Angie divorced.
That's not the song Mick Jagger... He didn't write it about her, did he?
Angie.
I just don't hear of a lot of Angies, and he was friends with Jagger, right?
I feel like I've heard that before.
It feels very believable if it is true, but also...
Quick, just look it up.
All right. That's my parents' song, by the way.
I feel like it is. Like, didn't they all... Because they were all, like, sleeping around together and stuff.
My dad tells this story sometimes about him and his best mate when he was younger would drink, and they got so drunk, and then his mate Steve... They would just laugh so hard because he was so drunk that he was dancing, hugging a pole, but singing, "Pole Angie, I love you.
I still love you.
Pole Angie."
You're right. Angie's written, it's a rumour that it's written about David Bowie's wife, Angela.
I felt like I'd heard that.
She wrote in her autobiography that she once walked in on Bowie and Mick Jagger in bed together.
Yeah, because there's rumours that they had an affair, right? That is.
Yep. So, yes.
Believe.
Very good. Well done.
Bowie and Jeff.
Anyway, he met, in 1990, he met supermodel Iman. They were introduced by a mutual friend, and he recalled, "I was naming the children the night we met. It was absolutely immediate."
Oh, wow. I'm like, wait, which children? Yeah, future children.
Their future children.
Renaming his already adult children. Iman, what do you want me to call him? I'll call him Frank. Do you like that? Let me know.
What do you want?
Greg. Anything for you.
He's currently Duncan, but we can change that. That is negotiable.
Dad, I'm 27.
Shut up, Frank. You like that? You like Frank?
Huh? Do you like when I tell him to shut up? Because I can do it again. Shut up, Frank.
She loves it.
She loves it.
They married in 1992. Tin Machine resumed their work the same month, but their audience and critics were ultimately left pretty disappointed and showed very little. They were disappointed in the first album and showed very little interest in the second. So,
did not win them back.
They toured again. Their live album, Tin Machine Live, Oy Vey, baby.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
Oh, no.
I think that's the whole reason I copy and pasted that in because I wanted to say that to you.
Oy Vey, baby.
It failed commercially and the band kind of drifted apart.
Unbelievable that it failed.
I know. And Bowie went back to his solo career. He and his wife had a daughter, Alexandria, or Lexi, Zara Jones, and she was born in August of 2000. They resided primarily in New York and London, as well as owning an apartment in Sydney's Elizabeth Bay.
Did not know that.
Never heard of Elizabeth Bay.
No, I had to ask a Sydneysider where it is.
Is it like an affluent, nice?
Yeah, it's a really beachy, nice area. Right on the, I think, and I apologise, Sydney people, if I'm wrong, but I think it's quite close to like the harbour on the ocean.
Right.
Point Harbour.
And they had their...
You're just saying other places that I still don't know.
That's where Malcolm Turnbull, our Prime Minister, lives.
Yeah, I was told it's in the vague proximity of kind of where the Prime Minister lives.
Which is Point Piper. Well done, Matt.
Thank you.
Good job, everybody. So I'm skipping ahead a bit now because, like I said at the very beginning, there is not possibly enough time to talk about everything that Bowie did. And basically he continued to release an abundance of work across so many different styles of music, and recreating his image and his style many times. Throughout the 90s, for example, he went through a more electronic phase of music. And he was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in January of 1996. Jumping,
a good year.
Jumping ahead quite a bit. On the 10th of January 2016, 2 days after his 69th birthday and the release of the album Black Star, Bowie died from liver cancer in his New York City apartment. He'd been diagnosed 18 months earlier, but had not made the news of his illness public.
No, I was so shocked.
Yeah, it was a shock.
I know a lot of people were, but
yeah.
Wow, it just felt like, really? He just released an album, which is actually an amazing way to go out.
Yeah.
Yeah, great album. And Johnny Cash did the same, right? It's interesting how some big artists will be able to live just long enough.
Yeah, hang on.
In Cash's case, to record an album, or Bowie's just to see it released.
You hear stories of that across so many different things. They're not just artists. You'll hear like people holding on to like until their kid's wedding or something, yes, and then they'll die soon after.
Or the new Star Wars release.
Exactly. Similar emotional experiences.
Similar big life milestones.
That you want to be around for.
Things that really matter.
Yeah.
Like being disappointed by a Star Wars film moments before death.
What a way to go.
Following Bowie's death, fans gathered at impromptu street shrines at the mural of Bowie in his birthplace of Brixton, South London. Fans laid flowers and they sang his songs. Other memorial sites included Berlin, LA, and outside his apartment in New York as well. After the news of his death, sales of his albums and singles soared, as it always does when any kind of musician passes away, their music, like, people just have this resurgence to listen back to it. So
yeah,
there's always a real boom, which is fascinating and kind of strange.
Yeah, I guess it's maybe some people mourning and other people just going, oh, shit, yeah, should listen to that guy.
Yeah.
He's dead now.
Mm.
Makes him cooler.
He insisted that he didn't want a funeral at all. And according
is this after he died?
Probably before he died, to be honest.
God.
So he didn't want
haunting.
He didn't want a funeral.
No funeral.
Do they have one?
Didn't want a fuss. No. And according to his death certificate, he was cremated in New Jersey a couple of days after he passed over.
Ashes.
Fun to funky.
I want to talk a tiny bit about his legacy as well, and then a fun fact at the end. Keep in mind as well, I've only talked about the first few decades of his music career. He was also in films from 1968.
People are going to be pissed off if you don't go into The Labyrinth.
We watched it in primary school and I hated it.
We watched it in primary school and I loved it.
Interesting. It was 20 years apart, the two experiences.
120.
Yeah. Anyway. Your version of The Labyrinth was written inside The Labyrinth.
Yeah.
Mm. So I've only touched on part of his music career. I haven't even gone into his acting career or anything else.
I'm glad you mentioned his painting, though.
Yeah, a bit of painting in there too.
Bit of dancing.
But I just mean, like, it's amazing that I've talked for an hour about this person and I've covered one small facet of their life. That's amazing.
Talk about his hit cover with Jagger of Dancing in the Street, which they did for charity.
Mm.
And they made a film clip, like, in half a day. They just shot
just
it.
Just did it.
Just dancing around. Have you seen it?
I've seen the clip.
Have you seen the video of it where they've taken out the music and it's just them breathing? Which I think someone's dubbed over them breathing, but it's fucking so funny. And sort of just like the shoes shuffling and stuff. I'll find it and post it. It's so funny.
That's so good. So for Bowie's 1969 commercial breakthrough, the song Space Oddity won him an Ivor Novello Special Award for Originality. That's a cool award.
I feel like other one-hit wonders you were talking about, Matt, probably would get that kind of respect later on if they went on to make other songs.
Yeah.
It wasn't just the Macarena or the Ketchup song.
Which is fun, but not worthy of heaps of awards.
Not timeless. Also, if you don't do anything apart from that, people are like, well, that was your mumba number.
Are you telling me that there was never an award given to the thong song?
That thong, the thong, thong, thong.
Tiesto, is that him?
No, that was... Oh, what was his name?
Who's that guy?
I'm on it.
Starts with S. Cisco.
Cisco, that's what I'm thinking of. Cisco. And Tiesto is the DJ.
He won 6 Grammy Awards and 4 Brit Awards, winning Best British Male Artist twice, the Award for Outstanding Contribution to Music in 1996, and the Brits Icon Award for his lasting impact on British culture, which was given after his death in 2016.
It's kind of funny. I, for some reason, expect him to win way more Grammys and Brit Awards, but...
Mm.
Anyway.
He declined the Royal Honour of the Commander of the Order of the British in 2000.
Sail ships.
And he turned down a knighthood in 2003. They're going to make him Sir David Bowie. He's like, nah.
Thanks.
I'm good, thanks.
But
I just think it's so rock and roll.
Yeah.
The Telegraph in 2016 estimated Bowie's total worldwide sales at 140 million records. In the United Kingdom, he was awarded 9 platinums, 11 gold and 8 silver albums. And in the US, 5 platinum and 9 gold.
That's a lot of...
That's a lot. In 2016, Rolling Stone proclaimed Bowie the greatest rock star ever.
Wow.
And I want to just finish on this fun fact. And I know I'm usually the judge of if they're fun or not, but here is my fun fact.
Okay, I hope it's fun.
In September of 1998, Bowie launched an internet service provider, BowieNet, developed in conjunction with Robert Goodale and Ron Roy. Subscribers to the dial-up service were offered exclusive content as well as a BowieNet email address and internet access. The service was closed by 2006. Imagine if your email was like jessperkins@bowienet.com.
Oh.
That's cool.
I mean, it could have been just bowie.net.
Could have been.
They just didn't get it.
At bowienet.net.com.
And that is my brief overview of... an amazing career, the first few decades of a career of David Bowie.
That is pretty cool.
Thank you. Thank you. Matt, did you have anything in there that you wanted to add?
I'm trying to think now.
It's so hard to capture.
Because since I abandoned that report, I went so deep into Johnny Cash that I just can't...
Can't remember anything about David Bowie.
Yeah, I imagine you probably were across a lot of the things.
I did find a website. What did David Bowie do at your age? And you put in your age and it tells you what...
Oh, can you do our ages?
Yes.
We won't reveal Matt's age, of course. That'd be offensive.
So our age, David.
To time.
Yeah, to time.
He moonwalked long before Michael Jackson on the Diamond Dog Tour, and there's a video. He's bloody moonwalking.
Oh, man, he invented the fucking moonwalk.
What did he do at...
I'm putting in your age, but I'm not going to reveal what it is. He created the hit Under Pressure in collaboration with Queen.
Yeah, he had a very good year, my birth year. But obviously you had to change the 16 to a 19.
Yeah, because
to make that birth year work.
Exactly.
But, that's cool. I think people...
It's fun!
Yeah. That is cool. I don't think my age is really a deep, dark secret. I am 3,000 years old.
Exactly.
Today.
Oh, wow. Aww,
happy birthday.
You old bastard.
You old bastard. Hey, let's thank some people.
Or should we say, I'm sure a lot of people suggested David Bowie.
Oh, yeah, of course. Sorry, I meant to say that at the very start.
Who were those cool people?
This topic was suggested by Zoe Jones, who maybe is a long-distance relative of
Zoe Bowie. Zoe Jones. So she got the surname and her first name rhymes with Bowie.
And she spells it Zoey, which I love. And Sally Pritchard as well.
Thank you, Zoe and Sally.
Yeah, just the two.
That's interesting.
I know. I would have thought it would be more, but I searched through both hats. Maybe I didn't. I don't know. I try.
There's going to be someone.
There's definitely. I'm looking now while we... Oh, fuck.
Zoe Effin Jones. That's great.
That was it. Just those two. I did check. Back yourself, Jess.
Okay. Thank you to those guys, Sally and Zoe, for suggesting David Bowie's a topic. Great one. And if you want to suggest another great topic, of course, you can do so at any time via our suggestion hat, Jack the Hat McVitie. There is a link to follow in the description of this episode. You click the link, you fill out your details, and then you tell us, you give us the topic, and you tell us why you think it would make a great topic.
Mm.
So that's always fun to read those.
Do it.
Please.
Oh, there we go.
And if you want us to keep, if you want to keep supporting the show or start supporting the show, you can go to patreon.com/dogoonpod. It's always very nice.
I have an idea of what we can do for the Patreon listeners today.
Oh, very, very good. Now, if you want us to read out your name, you can, or get bonus episodes, you just sign up to our show, give us a little bit per month, and we will love you.
I'm looking, we'll go with your one. My idea was what kind of dog? So, diamond dog.
Oh, fuck, that's good.
No,
all right, hang on. That's your pitch. Dave, you get to choose.
Okay, great.
So, okay, if we go with Matt's, we give them a type of dog.
Okay.
Sounds good when you
put it. Can I jump in before your one? Because yours is probably going to be the best.
Oh, my God. You have an idea too.
We say what kind of thin white thing they are.
That leads terribly.
The thin white dog.
I was going to say we name their backing band.
Oh, yeah, very good.
The Hype.
Like the Hype or the Spiders from Mars or...
Yes.
The Dogs.
The Dogs.
So what do you want to go with? Backing band, type of dog, thin white something.
Look, I'm happy to go.
Can I change my vote?
What do you want to go with?
Let's go, Jess.
It's your topic, Jess. I think we should go. Backing band's fun.
Don't patronize me.
It is also more creative.
It's the best one.
It is okay. The best one.
But the thin white something is very funny.
You are a thin white worm.
Gross.
Yeah, nearly everything would be no good.
Thin white dick.
Thin white stool.
Oh, yuck.
All right, let's do it then. Who wants to kick it off?
I'd love to thank... from California,
oh,
in Monterey Park, Jacob Gyron, or Gyron.
Jacob and the Gyrators.
Oh, yeah, perfect.
Jacob
perfect.
And the Gyrators.
Jacob Gyron and the Gyrators.
Gyron, son. Gyron.
That's great, Dave.
Do Gyron.
Do Gyron, run.
Do Gyron.
Jacob Gyron. Jacob Gyron. What do you reckon? G-I-R-O-N. Gyron?
Yeah, it could be Giron.
Giron.
Jacob Giron. And the Gyrators.
But he's from California. So if we were looking at like a French place, maybe. But I think they probably would have just.
Gyron.
Americanized it and called it Gyron.
Possibly. Jacob Gyron. Love it. Jacob Gyron and the Gyrators. So good. I'd also love to thank a lot closer home from Melbourne in the suburb of Carnegie, Mr. Darren Luchner.
Darren.
Darren Luchner and the Lunchtime Boys.
Did you say lunchtime?
I tried to say lunchtime. I have struggled a lot today.
Darren Luchner and the Lunchtime Boys is pretty fun.
Do you like
That's
it?
That's really good. Love
Don't
it.
Patronize me.
No, I enjoy it.
They all dress up as sandwiches.
Yeah.
They're crust cut off.
Could I thank some people now?
Yes. If you must.
I would like to thank from Brighton East here in Melbourne.
Mm.
Very affluent suburb. Very nice.
No, Brighton East.
Oh, really? So is there a difference between Brighton and Brighton East?
Yeah, I grew up there. I grew up near... you go from Brighton on the beach, which is the most expensive, then Brighton East, and then a part of that crosses over the highway. So you could even be on the wrong side of the highway where I grew up in Brighton East, but I grew up in Moorabbin, which touches Brighton East.
Wow.
It's a quick drop-off.
So it's a real shithole.
No, it's a great spot. That's where I used to play golf all the time, Brighton East, at the Brighton Golf Club course. It's a great spot. I'm only fucking around, Michael Irwin. When I found out your name was Irwin.
He hasn't said it yet.
I'm thanking Michael Irwin if you didn't get that, Michael. Now, what happened when you found out his name was Michael Irwin?
I got furious. I just went back to that time where Jess...
Oh, cracked it.
Cracked it about... all the Irwins, especially Michael, I remember it right. Is that the one you really got furious
at? Yeah, I got mad about him. Mad about Michael. Oh, Michael Irwin and the Mad Hatters.
Oh, that's cool.
Mad Hatters, and they all wear hats.
You didn't enjoy that. Go, you try. Someone else try. No, I'm shit at it, okay? You hate me. I get it.
Michael Irwin and the Snappy Crocodiles.
Yes, but it has to be said like that. Snappy Crocodiles.
Crocodiles.
And then people would read the post and be like, Snappy Crocodiles. No!
No.
It's Crocodiles.
Snappy Crocodiles.
Crocodiles.
And they dress as crocodiles in tuxedos.
I love it. I love it. Who else you got, Dave?
I would like to thank from our capital territory, the Australian capital territory, a person who is, I believe, frequently, I recognise their profile picture here, frequently in contact on Twitter, which we always enjoy, Laura Cotterill. Laura Cotterill.
Do you want to go again? Sorry.
What happened? Sorry.
He's editing the doc.
I had it spelt Lorna, and then I'm like, must be Lauren. It's changed to Lauren, and then I went, double check that. Oh, it's Laura.
Luckily, yeah. I'm reading from
so, there. Yeah, it would have been changing multiple times before your eyes. So.
But I could see it changing, and it was funny.
All right, gotcha.
Sorry.
I would like to thank, from our Australian Capital Territory, a frequent tweeter, which we always appreciate, Laura Cotterill.
Oh, Laura Cotterill. Laura and Cotterill. The cordial Laura Cotterill and the cold and flu medications.
I believe Laura is a student of some type. I remember seeing on her profile before. Possibly a writing student. Am I right, Laura? Possibly not. So the cough medication.
Or Laura Cotterill and the studious Kiddlywinks.
I love it.
I love it too.
I love it.
It's almost as good as lower third.
That good.
That good.
Lower third is such a... That is one of the worst things I've ever heard of. Or the best. Now they're always on that fine line.
Anyway, thank you so much, Laura. We appreciate your support.
I would like to thank a couple of people as well, if that's cool with you guys.
That'd be so good.
Another one who's a frequent tweeter and emailer as well, from Roville. Now, I'm definitely going to get the surname wrong here, but I'm going to give it my very best shot. I would like to thank Jackie Bonifin.
Bonifin. That's what I always read it as. She's given us a topic. One of our episodes was based on Jackie's suggestion. Was it the Christmas time mysteries, maybe even?
Maybe. Jackie and I have had a couple of email chats.
What about Jackie Bonifin and the benevolent
Banoffee Pies?
Yes.
Benevolent Banoffee Pies.
Do you like it?
Jackie Bonifin and the benevolent Banoffee Pies.
Love it.
That's
rolls
made
off
me
the
so
tongue.
Hungry.
Banoffee Buns, so it's all alliteration.
Oh, Banoffee Bun.
Tism wrote a song about Roville. It was called 14 Years in Roville. And the chorus went, I sentence you to 14 years in Roville.
That's about right.
That's funny.
Get worse for murder these days.
You get worse.
What?
For murder. Probably a good thing. You get worse than 14 years in Roville.
I said less for murder.
I feel like I heard more.
You get worse.
No, you get worse for murder, and that scale is correct.
That's fine. And I'd also like to thank, because we have a lot of, like a real run of Australians there, and like three Victorians in there, which is very cool, but across the seas, I would like to thank, from Glasgow, Josh Carson.
Josh Carson and the talk show hosts.
Okay. Johnny Carson.
Joshy Carson.
Joshy Carson and the talk show
hosts. I love it.
That's great.
That's cool. There you go. Well, thank you, Josh. Thanks. And Jackie, Laura, Michael, Darren, and Jacob. Thank you.
Let us know when you hit number one on any chart in the world, even if it's Belgium or something. I'd still be impressed. Slightly.
Oh, really?
Kind of. Number one in Belgium. Okay.
Get worse right. for murder.
Nice try.
And thanks to everyone that supports the show through Patreon. You really do make a difference in our lives. Pause for reflection. And you can get in contact at any time at dogoonpod@gmail.com. As I said, suggest a topic through the link, which is in the description of this episode, and at dogoonpod for all the social medias. It's always great to hear from you. Not long now till there's comedy festival shows, so please do come down. And Matt is touring the country, so go say hey. Because just like...
Habe?
just say, hey, honestly, we'll now know if you heard this episode, if Matt is in Adelaide and someone comes up to him and just says, Habe.
Yeah, but he'll also forget and then he'll be like, did you just say Habe? And then I'll have to be like, yeah, from that episode where you said come up and say Habe. It'll be very confusing and awkward. Just go up and say hello like a normal person.
I really want you to back this one. Habe.
Matt, remember Habe.
All right, I'll do my best to remember.
I'll look like an idiot if you don't get this.
Oh my God.
And I'll write it on my hand.
Habe.
It ain't me, Habe.
No, it ain't me, Habe.
Ain't me you're looking for, Habe.
All I'm thinking is that Gwen Stefani song, Hey Baby. Hey, babe.
Habe. That's great.
Girls say, hey, babe. we've had a good time this week. We've had some laughs. And thank you to David Bowie for being the coolest man ever so we can talk about you on the show. We're a legend. We'll be back next week with another episode. But until then, get in contact, give us a review, do all the fun stuff. But until then, I will say goodbye.
Laters. Bye.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates. It's not optional. You have to do it. We used to go easy on it, but now you have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.